Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello, and welcome to an hour of mind power. This is Donna Sebo. Oh, Black Friday. What a depressing term to use on a day when people just are out there having a wonderful time shopping and, if nothing else, recuperating. If you're like some people I know, they've run their 5 miles for the day working off those extra calories that they consumed with all of the holiday festivities. We have a wonderful guest today. Mike Berra is his name, and we're going to be talking about his intriguing book called The Choice. Now, this is how we can use conscious thought and physics of the mind to reshape the world. It's a perspective I think that you'll really enjoy. Mike, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Donna. It's good to be here.
Well, it's a delight, and I hope that you had a wonderful holiday.
I ate way too much, and I'm really feeling it today. So, you know, I guess so. Relatively speaking, I guess I had a pretty good holiday.
Well, I'll tell you what. It's just a joy, just a moment, to have you as a guest. You had a book that you published in the past called Dark Mission, The Secret History of NASA. And that was in 2007. And you really have had a message that you've wanted to get out to people through the years, and anything that has to do with science and physics and the metaphysical side is something that you enjoy getting your teeth into because you feel that there is a harmonic there that should be appreciated. And you have been involved in writing, which is a wonderful way to communicate with people, but you were also an engineering consultant for major aerospace companies like Boeing and Northrop.
Right.
And with this book, which, according to the information I was sent, there's a documentary that's going to be made on the book, The Choice.
That's true, yes.
And that's really exciting. Let me ask you a question. This is a personal question, Mike. What made you turn from what I'd call the analytical, logical side into the understanding that not everything is linear?
Well, you know, I think I always kind of had that in my, as part of my process and part of how I worked. It was always there, but truly what happened was last year on November, the night of the 8th and 9th of November, I had a real very personal and pretty powerful spiritual experience with someone that I was with that was really eye-opening and really, really changed not only how I viewed that person, but how I viewed a lot of different things in the world. And I found out a week or two later that that exact moment when this happened, right around midnight on the 8th, 9th, was when the, according to Dr. Carl Johan Kalaman, that the current phase of the Mayan calendar was shifting from what's called the sixth day to the sixth night. And in the sixth night, that what was happening is people were going to start to awaken to this sort of galactic consciousness and galactic consciousness and their place in it and become aware of what it was that they were here for. And you know, needless to say, I kind of opened my eyes and went, wow, that's exactly what happened to me. And I started to say, well, gosh, I guess all this Mayan calendar stuff is real because it really is shifting my consciousness in exactly the way that Dr. Kalaman predicted it. And that was really at that moment that I knew I had to write The Choice. I knew I had to connect people to understand the connection. I needed to help people get connected to the fact that the physics and the metaphysics were actually all connected to each other, and the physics was driving the metaphysics, and that this thing that happened to me wasn't just because of some random shift in the calendar. It was actually due to the movements of the planets, which are what all time measurements and calendars are based on anyway. So I kind of felt like, wow, I have sort of a unique perspective on this that I can share with the world, and then now here I am talking about all this hippie stuff all the time now.
Well, I think that as far as I'm concerned, this is a natural progression. I think when there is a major shift that is evolving, and it's rarely that the shift is going to happen worldwide in 30 seconds. It can, but it usually is sort of an evolving process. But this evolving process is speeding up. Primarily, in my observation, it is happening because of necessity. Mm-hmm. And so experiences that people like you have gone through and others, there is this questioning that maybe they didn't have time for, but all of a sudden it's a sense of urgency.
Right.
It's important to question. Now, you make a statement in your book that I was intrigued with. Physics drives consciousness, science drives spirit, and astronomy drives astrology. Now, all of those components in most scientific academic environments, just the last saying astronomy drives astrology, you'll have people that just go, you know, really ballistic over that. They'll say they're not related, and they are. I mean, how they can say it's not just doesn't make sense to me. And I was having this discussion with someone yesterday that we all have our paradigms that we view life through, mm-hmm. whether we are aware of them or not. And it's when we can expand our world, either through education, experience, living in different cultural environments, where we can say, wow, I didn't know this existed, that there's sort of a wake-up, a shaking in the paradigms, and all of a sudden they may start crumbling. And then you go, oops, what do I do with this now? You've described your experience. I am seeing this happening in so many different ways to so many different people. Technology is driving it, but again, I think necessity is driving it too, because of so much of what's going on in the world.
Right.
Why is this important to have this clarity in an academic environment that typically, go back in history, is as stoic as concrete?
Well, you know, the truth is that the scientist and the mystic used to be the same guy. I mean, in the village, they were the same man. The witch doctor was kind of the one who practiced the science and also practiced the metaphysical stuff. So it's really only been since the 1800s that we've sort of separated the two and pretended that they aren't part of the same thing. And what I knew, you know, from my experiences actually writing Dark Mission with Richard Hoagland was that the physics, the real physics of this universe is what he calls hyperdimensional, meaning that all energy and all life force really comes from a higher dimension. And the way that is energy is accessed in this universe is by the rotation of stuff, specifically and especially planets. And it is really the spin energy of these planets that is what drives the physical environment here on the Earth and also drives our consciousness. So if we're going to move forward and really fulfill the promise of the Mayan calendar, the hope of the Mayan calendar, and achieve this new level of consciousness that the universe seems to want us to come to, then we're going to have to sort of put aside all of our old biases and prejudices and say, well, wait a minute, maybe this idea has some merit, even if that means that we have to accept the fact that astrology is real, because the positions mm-hmm. of the planets affect, and I point this out in The Choice, I point it out in the book, and there's numerous experiments where the positions of the planets and planetary alignments have dramatic effects on physical instruments like pendulums, free-swinging pendulums, on electronic devices, on radio wave signals. And by implication, if the positions of the planets, their geometries, whether they're positive or negative astronomical aspects, if that can affect a radio wave, then it can certainly affect your consciousness, because your brain is nothing more than the same kind of electromagnetic energy that a radio wave is. That's what your mm-hmm. brain waves are. So really, you know, I think it's just that we're going to have to grow up and face the reality in some cases that we've been wrong about a lot of things. There's a lot of people that have a lot of personal ego invested in being the smartest guy on the block because they went to college and learned a bunch of stuff about quantum physics that's ultimately going to turn out to not be true. So, you know, mm-hmm. we just have to say, look, this is the way things really work. This is how things really happen. And once we accept that, then we can become much more in tune with what it is that God or the universe seems to want us to become here on planet Earth.
I just find it absolutely fascinating, and I'm far removed from being a scientist. You mention an individual in your book that I was just thrilled to see. His name is Dr. Bruce DePalma. My husband, I did not have the privilege of knowing him personally, but my husband did. And
yeah.
His partner, and he got to know him in the 1990s, in fact, helped to support his scientific research. But Bruce DePalma was a man who unfortunately died in 1997, but he left a legacy of science that is public domain.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the elements was the IND machine, which is there for anybody to develop.
Right.
And his brother is a well-known Hollywood director, Brian DePalma.
That's right.
But tell us a little bit about Bruce, because this is a very significant part of your book and what he discovered that enabled you in your research to go, oh, this is why this affects this and
mm-hmm.
this affects that. Tell us a little bit about Bruce.
Well, Bruce, the late Dr. Bruce DePalma, was a genius and he was a pioneer, and he's somebody who, you know, I mean, it's actually kind of annoying to me that we put so much emphasis on people like Einstein and Stephen Hawking and Carl Sagan, who have turned out, basically everything they've ever argued has turned out to be wrong, and Bruce has been right about everything he's ever argued, and he's invisible. Nobody knows who he is.
Mm-hmm.
But he was an MIT-educated physicist who kind of decided that he was interested. He worked with some very famous people. I think Edward Land, the man who created the Polaroid Land camera, which was revolutionary in the 1960s, he worked closely with him. And as he went through his scientific career, he got very interested in rotation, in rotating, you know, magnetic fields and in large generators, heavy stuff that he could rotate at very high rates of speed. And he kind of, the powers that be kind of put their arm around him and said, Bruce, you know, if you really want to have a career in science, you really don't want to be fooling around with this stuff. Because as I point out in the choice, you know, Newton's laws of motion are only work if you exclude rotation from the equations. So
mm-hmm.
the problem is, of course, is everything in the universe, including every atom in your body, is constantly rotating. So it's really the key to everything. And so what he had to do is he had to kind of go off on his own. He had to reject the scientific establishment, form his own scientific research organization, and go off and play around with rotation. And really the most incredible experiment that he ever did was called the spinning ball experiment, where he took basically a couple of pinballs, like little metal balls like pinballs, and one of them
mm-hmm.
he put into a lateral spin of about 27,500 RPM, and the other ball was sitting there completely static, and he injected them both out of the test rig with equal force. And the one that was spinning rose faster and went farther and fell faster than the ball that was not spinning. And there's absolutely nothing in Newtonian physics or anything else, quantum physics, that can account for that. The only thing that you can say about the experiment is that somehow the spinning ball pulled more energy into it than the one that was not spinning. You know, there's different ways to argue it. You can say either it pulled in more energy from the ether, from the higher dimensions, or it somehow offset gravity because it was rotating. It really doesn't matter which way you look at it. But
mm-hmm.
the bottom line is that it was a revolutionary experiment, and I've actually had numerous people try to tell me, well, that experiment doesn't mean anything unless it's done in a vacuum, which, first of all, is an absolutely nonsensical argument. But beyond that, the experiment was done in a vacuum, and I talk about that in the choice also. It was called Explorer 1, and it was the first rocket we ever launched. And that ended up in a much, much higher orbit than anybody could have predicted,
mm-hmm.
Simply because they were rotating the upper stage of the rocket to equal out the thrust. So DePalma was basically a genius. He did a lot of experiments. He discovered that there was this effect that he had first touched on in the spinning ball experiment was something where you seem to be able to add energy into any given system if you were rotating it. And the faster it was rotating, even if the system itself, the mechanical system, wasn't very massive, the more energy it seemed to pull. So, in other words, a fast-spinning gyroscope was much more powerful than maybe a slower spinning giant rocket assembly on top of a three-stage rocket. So really fascinating stuff. And also he discovered that this effect was directional, not spherical. In other words, the energy seems to come out of the beam, and that ties into a bunch of other physics stuff I go into in the choice, like mm-hmm. torsion waves and things like that. And sadly, he passed away in 1997, I guess from a stomach ailment. And you know, it's really up to those of us that are left, including my co-author on Dark Mission, Richard C. Hoagland, who did know Bruce well and work with him on some stuff. It's up to us to make sure the world knows about the experiments that he did, and you know, to have his work appreciated in his posthumously. I guess it's really a shame, but that's what we have to do.
Well, that's a reality, and I really feel that Bruce gave a tremendous gift to the world because
mm-hmm.
he said, I'm not putting it under patent, I'm not doing anything here, I'm giving it to public domain, go for it.
This you know, it's interesting, it's funny that you say that because I was going to tell you, normally I don't go too far off into the metaphysical world in these interviews because I am trying to keep this book as mainstream as possible, but one of the things that I was told through a friend who is psychic and pretty impressively psychic
mm-hmm.
was she said that, you know, a lot of the stuff on hyperdimensional physics, the theory derives from mathematical alignments of basically what appear to be artificial structures on the planet Mars. Now, that is pretty freaky for some people, but that's where the inspiration came for Richard
mm-hmm.
Hoagland and Errol Torin to start digging into this stuff that becomes the backbone of the choice. And she said one time we were sitting around talking, and she said, you know, the people who built those monuments are kind of laughing at you because the whole point of Dark Mission was they wanted everybody to appreciate the gift that they had given the planet, the gift that they had given us, which was this mathematics which led to the hyperdimensional physics discoveries. And instead we went off on this very dark mission conspiracy, the government's hiding things from you angle. So, you know, there are gifts all over the place, and Bruce's work is one of those gifts, and it's really
mm-hmm.
up to us now to – and one of the things I wanted to do with the choice is to sort of try to pay that back and take what they had given us and put it into a context and a perspective that would allow, you know, people who had never heard of this to start asking questions. Well, you know, what about higher dimensions? What does quantum physics say about that? Those kinds of things.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's so many breakthroughs that are evolving
mm-hmm.
that it's a new way of thinking. And you make a point with your book where you say education and intelligence are two completely different things. And I
yeah.
agree with you because you say since the 1960s, the focus in many levels of higher education has been to dominate with a certain thinking absorption pattern rather than encouraging you to be innovative. What can you come up with? What do you disagree with?
Right.
Why do you disagree with it? Are you willing to test it? Are you willing to fail? What are you going to do? So these are points that have come into your book that I think are very, very well stated. Now, one of the things that I wanted to get into was the research that you have done relative to various cultures, and one of them had to do with the yuga cycles.
Mm-hmm.
There's another section that has to do with the prophecies of the Mayan people.
Yes.
So let's touch on a couple of those, and then I want to get into the Hopi, because to me, they have done some things that have not really received very much recognition, even though I've read about them before. But there is an acknowledgement that there is a major shift that's coming, and they're not calling it a doomsday. So
mm-hmm.
let's cover each of those cultural perspectives.
Okay, well, the yuga cycles are something that comes up in some very ancient writings of the ancient Vedic Hindus from you know in the Indo-European areas, in basically India, what's now India,
mm-hmm.
in prehistoric times or really around the time of Christ. And these writings talk about the fact that the Earth itself and the Sun orbits around something that they call Vishnu's navel or the Vishnu Nabhi, which they describe as a star that the entire solar system orbits around. And when we are aligned in the light of Vishnu Nabhi, we are more enlightened, things are better, we're in a positive golden age. And when we're blocked from that light through, I guess, interstellar gas and dust or some other things that block us, then we go into these dark periods, these Kali Yugas. And, you know, according to the way I interpreted some of the numeric information, The current Kali Yuga cycle began right around the same time as the current Mayan calendar long count did, right around 3114 to 3102 BC. And they both then should be ending around the same time, right around now, between now and 2023, if that you know, if the Mayan cycle of 5,125 years is the correct one. In other words, if that's what when we move from cycle to cycle to cycle in our orbit around this object. So, you know, the belief systems of the end of the Kali Yuga is supposed to happen when, you know, Kali comes down and basically massacres all the people that really aren't living a spiritual life. It's not a very pleasant kind of story. And the same thing, in many ways, people interpret the Mayan calendar the same way, because at the end of the current long count calendar cycle, supposedly, one of the legends says that the entity Kukulcan or Quetzalcoatl will ride a serpent rope from the center of the galaxy, manifest here in 3D on December 21st, 2012, and pass judgment on the human race. And you know, when people hear that and they read Revelations 20:12, which talks about judgment and all this stuff, we got this whole biblical, you're good, you're bad, you go to heaven, you go to hell kind of thing. And I don't think it's that kind of judgment, because what I think that the calendar is talking about, or what the monuments are talking about, first of all, the serpent rope to me could not be clearer that it is a spiraling energy beam is what they're talking about. And if you put together what Dr. De Palma did and the work of Dr. Nikolai Kozyrev on torsion energy, it's clearly a torsion beam is what they're describing. So even 5,000 years ago, the Mayans understood the basic things about physics that today we want to deny. But when it talks about judgment, what I believe that they're talking about is it's judging the intention of this planet. It's going to Kukulcan is going to manifest here and judge our intention for the planet. What's our intent? What do you want me to do with your planet? And I think in the past, according to some of the legends, you know, we've been in a pretty bad place. We've been very unspiritual. We've lost our way, and I think we've elected to wipe the slate clean and start over again. And this time, what I'm trying to get people to understand is that these legends all talk about this judgment and in the context of choice, that we all have a choice as to which way we want to go forward. So I'm trying to get people to appreciate that they have a role to play in the apocalypse. The apocalypse simply meaning that, you know, a veil will be lifted. That's what the word actually means, that a veil will be lifted and things will be revealed. That's what Revelations is about. It's revealing things that have been hidden from us. And once those things are revealed to us, then it's up to us to choose which direction we want to go forward. So I'm trying to get everybody to understand that these ancient prophecies not only align with the physics that I describe in the choice, but they also align with, you know, with the stories themselves, in the sense that they all talk about us having a choice at the end of this period.
Well, I think in every culture on the planet, any legends of the past, they are very harmonic, regardless of where you are in the world. There's always the disasters that are recorded and passed along as a warning that when you get too big for your britches, watch out, Mother Nature is going to come along and give you a good smack. And I'm putting it in a sort of a slap-hazard way, but it's really the truth. Whenever you want to be humbled, all you need to do is be close to when a volcano erupts, or be in the line of a tsunami, or get hit with Arctic storm fronts that just absolutely are beyond your comprehension. There's so much. I think that we just assume with arrogance that we are not touchable, and that's not true. And so time and time again throughout history, again, whatever culture you go into, there's always these stories. Mm-hmm. And they are passed along for the purpose not of making people fearful, but trying to wake them up, I think.
Yeah, I agree with you.
I think that's where we are.
I agree with you.
Fear does not accomplish much. It's a two-edged sword, in my estimation. But when you are educated and you understand that you've got options to work with, and you're willing to explore whatever those options are, and that's what I think your book emphasizes. It's come out of the mental closet. Don't hesitate to examine paradigms, because you may find that yours isn't holding water. It's literally disintegrating right in front of your eyes.
Mm-hmm.
And become educated, be alert, be aware, question. And I think that's very important. Now, the Hopi, actually went before the United Nations,
mm-hmm.
and they made a presentation to them there, warning of the changes that were to come.
Right.
And you go into that, and I found it quite interesting, and I had heard about this a long time ago,
mm-hmm.
and I thought, this is amazing, because this was part of the prophecy that was passed down to them.
Right.
That there were going to be four representatives. There was an opportunity to speak to, at a building, and you can give the exact legend or the exact story as to what happened and when it happened. Share that with my audience.
Yeah, there. According to Dr. Thomas or Thomas Bianco, who was one of the Hopi elders that has tried to get into the United Nations for decades, according to him, there was a meeting in the late 1940s of the Hopi Nation, and four elders were chosen to deliver a message to a great house of Micah. There were these ancient stories about a great house of Micah. Now, Micah is a Hopi word that means glass or house of glass.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that is a clear description of the United Nations building, and it described from at least hundreds of years before that there would be a place where men would get together and try to solve the world's problems without violence. Now, I think the UN has deteriorated into something far less noble than it was originally conceived as. But that, whether that's the case or not, these four elders were chosen. One of them was Thomas Bianco, and apparently they tried on three previous occasions to come to the UN and warn them about the Hopi prophecies and what they said about this particular period in history. They were rejected three times, but on the fourth time, they were allowed to come. And Bianco went there and gave a presentation, including he showed them the petroglyph called, that's on a place called Prophecy Rock on Second Mesa in Arizona, I believe. And this basically describes the Hopi stories of the three previous worlds of man, which are no longer with us, and it describes the path of the fourth world of man, which is the current world. And essentially the message was that these three previous worlds have all, you know, they came forward, they got very advanced, they turned away from God, and they were wiped out in major cataclysms. One of them was by fire, one of them was by flood, and one of them was by ice. So those guys, those figures on that mesa, they had heads separated from their bodies. They were called the two-hearted people, meaning that their hearts and their heads had become separated. They had lost the connection to God. And the fourth figure on there, which is the current, supposed to represent the current world of man, is on an upward path, a path that's up above on this figure, and he's headed towards a very jagged, rocky, upward slope that then drops off into oblivion. And so the message is that if we stay on this path of turning away from spiritual things and turning away from harmony with the earth and being selfish and being greedy and indulging ourselves in materialism, that we will end up with the same fate as the previous three worlds of man. But the really cool thing is that right before that rocky, jagged period of, I guess you'd call it tribulation, begins, there's a line that goes straight down from this upper path to a lower path, which is one of peace and harmony with nature and with God. And that is a point where it says that we can all choose instead to follow the path that we were meant to follow, which is one that's closer to the Creator. So it's a really interesting, fascinating story that they brought, and they basically said, look, we have these prophecies, and here they are, and there is some documentation indicating that they've been around for hundreds of years, and they predicted
mm-hmm.
all kinds of things, the coming of the white man, the railroads, the interstate highway system, hippies, you know, up to and including the last one, which is the only one which apparently has not come true yet, which is that there would be a great abode in the sky that would fall like a blue star, and this would be the last event that would happen before the prophecies of the Hopi people ceased, meaning that we went through this great cleansing again.
Mm-hmm.
So that, I think, identified as the International Space Station, and that is still up there. So as long as it's still up there, I'm thinking, okay, we're good, because that's the only abode in the sky that I'm aware of right now, at least man-made abode in the sky. So it's really fascinating stories, but again, it's full of hope because we still have a choice at the end which direction we want to go.
You have such fascinating stories, and I know we're running out of time here, but your book, The Choice, encompasses so many variables of thinking. and various people who have given their lives and their energies into trying to convey a message, like Ruth DePalma. You mm-hmm. also have Nikolai Kozyrev. And his story is just amazing, absolutely
mm-hmm.
amazing.
Mm-hmm.
But I know, again, we're just about out of time. And, Mike, this has been such a delight. I so appreciate your coming on and being with us, especially after the holiday. What is the website that we can go to find out more about the research, the information? I know we can get the book, but what's your website people can research?
It's www.mikebara.com. It's one R, MikeBara.com. You can also find me on Facebook and on Twitter. There's links to that stuff there. There's links to a YouTube channel there. And I'm now putting out a monthly newsletter, so there's I just actually put the first issue out today.
Oh,
so
congratulations.
That's gone out. And thanks. And you know, just kind of getting people to, you can keep track of book signings and different appearances.
Mm-hmm.
I've been on the Ancient Aliens show on TV and stuff like that lately. So just a lot of information there on keeping track of the book. And, of course, you can get The Choice in most major bookstores, and you can also buy it through MikeBara.com. You can go to a link there to Amazon or Barnes & Noble.
.com.
And there's
wonderful.
Also one other thing. There is a cruise into 2012 that's happening in March, and
mm-hmm.
I'm going to be participating in that along with Richard Hoagland and Dr. Carl Kalaman and Daniel Brinkley and Jim Mars and a bunch of other really very well-known people in this community. We're all going to get together and try to sort out what's all going to happen here in the next
Oh, that's exciting.
Years.
So people will find out about that. Mike Bara has been my guest. The book is The Choice. This is something that if you are intrigued with possibilities, science, the unknown, quantum physics, want to find out about some people that have left a legacy that we can all benefit from, go and check out his website, MikeBara.com, MikeBara. Mike, I wish you continued success. Thank you again for being my guest today.
And thank you very much for having me.
My pleasure. This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. We'll be back in just a moment.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature. However, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
If you're searching for the perfect gift for a child, consider God's Kiss by Donna Sebo. That's right. Donna is not only a mental practitioner and psychic, she's an author as well. God's Kiss beckons all children and the young at heart to enter the dream world of a little traveler named Johnny. You can order your book today by sending a check or money order to Mrs. Sebo's Classics, Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. That's Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. If you'd like both the book and cassette, you pay only $19.95 plus applicable tax and shipping charges. This is the book for your favorite child of any age. Donna Sebo's God's Kiss is about a child's sense of place in the world, and it's destined to be a children's classic. Order now. Call 1-800-872-8852. That's 1-800-872-8852. God's Kiss is written by Donna Sebo and illustrated by Ed Gedrose. Buy it today. 1-800-872-8852.
As a counselor, Donna Sebo is available for private consultations by appointment. These can be done by telephone or in person. If you'd like to schedule an appointment with Donna, call 253-582-5604 or 800-872-8852. That's 253-582-5604 or outside of Pierce County, 800-872-8852.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome, and telephone lines are now open. If you'd like to give me a buzz and let me light up your life with some intuitive insight, here is the toll-free number that you can go to. It's 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. And all I need from you is your first name or your initial, and then after that, well, I'll tell you what I perceive, and then you're welcome to ask me a question about anything that is of interest to you. Again, if you'd like to give me a buzz, 888-815-9756. Now, I know that you're probably stuffed to the gills after the holidays, but I have to tell you, I got another recipe from one of my listeners, and it's for cinnamon rolls. Oh, I know, but hey, this is stuff that's good. Now, what it is, it's from a fellow, his name is Lon, and Lon said, I have never been that successful with cinnamon rolls, but he said, wow, I made this recipe, and I'm passing it along because it was absolutely the best one I ever had. So, I wanted to give you a heads up on this because we'll be checking this out, and I'll be sharing it with you. They said it's supposed to be the closest to the Cinnabon cinnamon rolls, which you find everywhere. And if ever you've walked by a Cinnabon, I'll tell you, it's like someone has grabbed your nose with fragrance tweezers and are just, not tweezers, tongs, and pulling you along. Maybe I should use the word clamp. Go from tweezers to tongs to clamp. And you want to go over and just go, please, give me the whole pan. I mean, they're absolutely amazing with the fragrance. Well, you've got the vanilla and the cinnamon. So anyway, I'm going to share this with you, and you can then let me know how they turn out, because I have not yet had the opportunity to bake them. I may try to make this recipe this weekend if I have some time, because I love to bake, and I love how it smells. The problem is, I've got to find enough people that are going to want to eat it. So I've got to be able to get rid of it because I don't want to eat it. I don't want to end up looking like a cinnamon roll. So anyhow, in just a moment, I'll be sharing it with you. So get that pad of paper handy. I wanted to quickly give you some information. One, be sure if you have a paranormal story that you send it along to me, because I am collecting them and I'm putting together information for a book. And it's going to be about experiences that people have had. So if you have a story you'd like to share with me, you'll be fully acknowledged in the publication, and I would just love to have you send it to me via email. So send it to Donna@DelphiInternational.com. That's Donna@DelphiInternational.com. The cutoff date for the collection of the stories will be January the 1st of 2011, and then I've got to put everything together. So I would appreciate it if you could send that off, if you've had an out-of-body experience, had a ghost experience, whatever it is. I would love to hear from you. Also, for those of you in Western Washington listening to the show today, I want you to know that I'm going to be doing an appearance on December the 11th at the King's Bookstore in downtown Tacoma. And this is a wonderful annual event. They're into their fifth year, I believe. You can look up Dickens Fair, Tacoma, Washington, find out all the information, all the special events that are going on. I will be at the King's Bookstore doing many consultations, many readings for people that are interested in that, from 11 in the morning until 4 in the afternoon. I'll be in costume, and it's just a fabulous environment. It's the right environment for me, because you know how much I love books. So anyway, great people, wonderful bookstore. There's going to be all kinds of performances, and I hope that you'll come along. And part of the proceeds from the many readings that I do will be going towards the charity that this event will choose. Each year they choose a different organization and they will support that organization with a percentage of monies that are collected. So I wanted to let you know, you can check it out on my newsletter, which is up for November, and the information will be in December's newsletter as well. And all you have to do is go in and check them out, and then I look forward to seeing you there. Be sure to stop by and say hello. I wanted to also share quickly with you a particular ghost story. And this is something that when I came across it, I thought that it was really fun to do, because so many times, if you've ever gone to historical places, like in the South or anywhere, historical environments, there will be people that will be extra sensitive to whatever is going on, and many times they have their own unique experiences. Well, Bob, who is a guide for the Farnsworth House Inn in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, he had so many experiences of his own, and he said he was down in the cellar talking to some people, about 30 of them, you know, about the history of the Farnsworth House Inn. And he said halfway through his presentation that he was doing, he saw a black, vaporous blob, that's how he described it, coming down from the stairs area, which was in the rear of the theater in this building. And it hovered there, he said, for a few moments, and then went towards the front of the theater. And he said as it was moving forward, people actually just sort of moved away, and the temperature around the group dropped dramatically. In fact, he could see the breath of one of the gentlemen that was in the group. And there was an entity that came out of this black vaporous blob that came straight towards him and then suddenly went, boom, up, shot up through the floorboards of the house. And he said, who is that? He was so fascinated by the experience. He said, so terribly curious. A lot of people, when they were going through this building, because of this experience that more than one person had witnessed, it was like, this is too much. My nervous system won't handle it. And so they vacated the building. But he said, when he did his research, he found that there was a lot of what he called stressful history associated with this building, and the people that own it currently have just been absolutely enamored of the place. They've owned it for 30 years, and they just take such good care of it, and they've made repairs, and they have all of this wonderful story that they relate about this place, and they haven't been driven off by this energy. Well, they found out that before the Civil War, there was a little boy by the name of Jeremy who died in this building, and his father, whose name was William, lost his mind over the death of his son. He had a breakdown and never recovered. So what they feel this energy is like a residual energy that the father has left behind, and there was an energy also with the son that is still in the house. And they say they've also got a little girl by the name of Sissy who died of some kind of lung ailment in this house, and they say they see Sissy periodically, and she's sort of sad. There's the energy of an owner who apparently was not a particularly nice person, and so he's left his pattern there. And they said this place is really, really haunted, and the permanent residents that are living there, they love it. They say it means that we've got a house that's alive. Well, this is Donna Siebel. I'm going to take a break for a moment, and then when we come back, I'll share the recipe with you and a little bit of this and a little bit of that. We'll be right back.
Enter the magical world of God's kiss.
Johnny finds himself at the entrance to a large open valley, framed by high mountains rich in the brown-red colors of the earth. He stands in awe, even a little fearful of the mountain's great size. After all, he's just a little boy and not very tall.
God's Kiss is a beautifully illustrated children's book about a young boy's journey into a valley with children and animals from all over the world. They are gathering together to experience the wonder of love and beauty that will affect their lives forever. A talking book audio narrated by the author Donna Sebo accompanies this wonderful storybook, creating a special magic all of its own. This book package makes a wonderful gift for those special children in your life ages 3 to 10. God's Kiss book and talking book audio are only $19.95 plus shipping and handling, and the author Donna Sebo will autograph and personalize your book if you request it. Call 800-872-8852. You can also order through Donna Sebo's website, www.delphiinternational.com. That 800 number again, 872-8852.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna. Okay, let me give you this recipe because I think that if you are a baker and you absolutely love the smell of cinnamon and vanilla, and maybe for Sunday breakfast you're going to have some people over because this weekend is a big holiday weekend and you want to try something out, Lon sent this recipe, and this is a guy that said, I've never done so well. This is absolutely awesome. So here it is. It serves about 12 people. And he said he wants to express his appreciation to whoever posted the recipe because he just loved the result. Now, this is what you're going to need for the dough. Really simple. You need 1/4 cup of warm water, 1 tablespoon of yeast, and 1 cup of milk, which needs to be at room temperature. You need 1 large egg beaten, again at room temperature, 1/4 cup of butter, and that should be softened butter, room temperature again, 1 tablespoon of sugar, 1/2 teaspoon of salt, 4 cups of all-purpose white flour, and 1/2 package of instant vanilla pudding mix. Aha! Surprised you. You didn't expect that one, did you? All right. Now that's your dough. So the filling is going to be 1 cup of brown sugar, and you want to pack that into the cup as tightly as you can. You want 1 tablespoon of cinnamon and 1/4 cup of butter, and that needs to be softened. Now, let me also give you the recipe for the cream cheese cinnamon frosting. That's right. This goes on top. It's part of the magic. Now, for the cream cheese cinnamon frosting, you're going to need 1/2 teaspoon of cinnamon, 4 ounces of cream cheese, which has been softened or at room temperature, 1/4 cup of butter softened, room temperature, 1/2 teaspoon of vanilla, half a tablespoon of milk, and 1 1/2 cups of powdered sugar. Okay, let's get down to putting it all together. Now, with your dough, you're going to want to put the yeast in some warm water, and you want to mix your remaining dough ingredients in a bowl, a mixer bowl, that you have a dough hook on. That is going to make it easy. If you do it by hand, it's going to take you a lot more time. But if you have the dough hook, that's great. Once you've got all your ingredients in your bowl, add your yeast mixture and knead it until it is really thoroughly mixed, and the dough will pull away from the bowl. It'll be just absolutely wonderful. And the dough should be almost silky in the ways that it feels. It should not have stickiness. If your dough is sticky, maybe you've got a humidity level in your kitchen, so what you want to do is add a little bit of flour and then knead it until it doesn't stick to anything. Now, your brown sugar and cinnamon for the filling, you want to mix that. And then you want to have that ready in a small bowl to the side. Remember, you're going to have your cinnamon, your brown sugar, and your butter. But the butter, what you're going to do, after you take your dough and you roll it out to an 18 by 30 rectangle, you want to spread your butter over the dough and then evenly sprinkle it with the sugar and cinnamon. So you want that butter, because the butter is going to be like glue. That's exactly the way I describe it. And it is just going to keep all that stuff where it's supposed to be. You want to start at the long edge of the dough, and you want to roll it up really, really tight. And then you want to mark the roll every 2 inches. And what was recommended is to take a thread, unminted dental floss works beautifully. You want to cut the roll by placing the thread under the roll at your mark, crisscross over, and pull it to cut. Then you take and put your rolls into greased baking pans. You want to separate them. You don't want them butting up against each other. You want to have about 2 inches around the sides because these rolls are going to rise. You want to cover them and let them rise in a warm, draft-free place until they're almost double, and it'll take about an hour. Let me give you a tip on having bread rise because I make a lot of our own bread whenever I have a chance. If you will turn on the light in your oven and you put your pans that have the bread that needs to rise in there, the warmth from the light is enough to, and if you cover your bread with a towel, that's what I like to use, it is going to work beautifully. There's just enough warmth there so the yeast will be doing its job. And after rise, the rolls will be touching each other as well as the sides of the pan. You want to bake the rolls at 350 degrees for 15 to 20 minutes until they're golden brown. Now, while they're baking, then mix your cream cheese, your butter, your vanilla, and milk. And then you want to add your powdered sugar and cinnamon and mix until it's smooth. And as soon as those rolls come out of the oven, you slather that on and serve them. I'm telling you, you will be just absolutely praised to the ceiling. And if ever you've watched the people put the stuff together at Cinnabon, it is amazing what they do. It's just amazing. But they've got it down to a science, and it works. And it's still one of the best tasting things you can ever buy. And again, like I said, it'll just capture you. So I want to thank Lon for sending that in to me. Now, I want to let you know about some of my guests that are going to be upcoming. On Monday and Tuesday of next week, we're going to have Eric Shapira. The book is called A New Wrinkle, and it's all about how people, wow, they don't have to worry about growing old and becoming defunct. Mm-mm, there's a lot to look forward to and a lot to do. Then we're going to be talking with Dreema Maynard, who is the wife of Maynard. That's right, the guy that played Gilligan. And we're going to be going down memory road regarding Gilligan's Island and some other wonderful information about a terrific guy. And then on Wednesday of next week, we're going to be talking about The Christmas Gift by Bill Bennett. This is a phenomenal story. It is going to touch your heart and your mind, and it'll make a great gift for anyone that you're wanting to give something special to. And then we're going to be talking food on Thursday of next week, the painted fish and other Mayan feasts. Aha, yes, we are going to be traveling via the telephone lines to Mexico, and we are going to be talking about food that is very, very different but delicious. And then we're going to be talking with King Arison, who is the drummer with Neil Diamond. He's been rescheduled for December 3rd. He's busy making a movie right now. So we weren't able to have him on today, but I was so thrilled with having our guest Mike Barra. He was able to come in and fill in when King couldn't make it, and it's just been an absolute delight having these wonderful people on the show. So I wanted you to know about that. That's what's coming up next week, so be sure to tell your friends, and don't forget, these shows are also archived for you right here on bbsradio.com, and that enables you at your leisure to come in, and if you've missed something, you say, oh, gee whiz, I really wish I hadn't, then just know you can go in there, you can listen to the shows, and you can catch up on what's happening on the Donna Sebo Show. And shortly, I will be putting up the list for the month of December, and it will be available too, because you can get show information just by going in and checking out the Donna Sebo Show. You'll see a little place where you can click and find out who's coming up on the show. So I welcome you to do that. Okay, I want to give you some tips a little bit about credit. We're in the holiday season. The danger of your having your credit compromised, your credit card stolen, or abused in some way, it's very, very high. I was talking with someone that works with banks relative to security, and they're saying it is unbelievable. For those of you that might go to coffee shops and you like to use the open Wi-Fi systems, please do not do any operation like that unless you know that your system is encrypted, where people can't get into it. Also, something that I've been told over and over again, that when you're using your computer, whether it's at the airport, whether it's at a coffee shop, any place where it's a public environment, even in your own home, you want to be sure that if you're doing anything relative to finances and you go into a secured site, don't just close it out. You want to log off of wherever you are, because electronically the information is still floating out there, and there are those people that have sophisticated equipment that are doing search, find, and download, and they can have access to your account. So be aware, you don't assume anything. Take care of business and be electronically savvy. And I've got so many other little points of information. We're out of time here. Remember, always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. And as Mike said in the show today, you have choice. Remember that. You have choice. You have a brain, you have the capacity to reason, to analyze, and sometimes when we get into a spot where we don't think we can, ask for help. Don't be afraid to open up your mind to the opportunities of choice that are available to you, and sometimes the best thing you can do is brainstorm with people who are outside of whatever your challenge and concern might be. Donna Sebo here. Have an absolutely awesome holiday weekend. Thank you for joining me, and I look forward to having your company again on Monday. God bless, be well, be safe, and have fun. Donna Sebo here. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.